You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Let's ride!
You know what I did? I splurged on myself. I splurged a little bit today. I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give myself some music. Now, I might be doing a really ballsy thing. I don't know. I did a little emotional splurging. I needed some music that I could relate to again to give me some rhythm, okay? I'm a drummer, first and foremost. You need a little bit of drive, a little bit of rhythm, something to wrap yourself around. That's the heartbeat. Everything else is, you know. Then you get to your kidney functions and the rhythm. We need your heart rhythm or nothing else works. Then again, I guess you can say if you don't have a functioning kidney, your heart won't work for much longer. So, I mean, it just doesn't matter. What came first, the heart or the kidney? The heart. The heart. The fetus... Fetus has a heartbeat after what, like 2 weeks? A couple of weeks the heartbeat's detected? Matt, speak into that a little more?
I don't know. I thought maybe the kidney came first.
No, I don't think the kidney came first. When a woman's pregnant, the baby, it has a heartbeat, I think, by like 2 weeks.
So then that would mean that it's alive, right?
Oh, totally.
Oh. I just want to make sure that living things have...
It already has its own DNA. It already has its own... It could have its own blood type by that time. I mean, it's already an independent body from the mother. Well, not independent in the fact that it's dependent in its formative phases, but I mean, yeah. There's already a mutual exclusivity and on a DNA level. You know? That's what I was trying to say, yo. I don't know. We're just chilling. It's me. It's Matt. It's Gypsy. I was just talking with Gypsy about a friend of ours, Vinny Brusco, good buddy of ours for many years over here at the studio. And Vinny's got a podcast, The Vinny Brusco Show, and he used to do the show over here at the studio for years. He actually came, left, came back. We had a lot of fun. And but he went off. He got married. He's got kids now. Imagine that, all grown up. Vinny Brusco. But we keep in touch. And I was talking to Gypsy about this. Gypsy, I'll put you the microphone on over there. Is that it? Number four? That's number three.
Yes.
Yeah. So what I was gonna say is that because Gypsy has this situation with Vinny Brusco as well. Where Vinny keeps in touch, like, very well. You have to give him credit. He keeps in touch with me. Thank God he does, because I see his name and I say what's up as often as I can. But I get a message from Vinny Brusco a couple times a week sometimes.
A couple times a week?
Sometimes. Like, okay. Like
in the past month, like, how many times?
Yeah, we'll have, like, a conversation, then maybe a follow-up conversation if there was something, whatever. But they're little spritzers of conversations. And we had this in common, you and I, where we noticed that whenever we talk to Vinny Brusco, it's like we have a conversation, and then as soon as it came, it left, and there was never... It doesn't seem like...
It's almost like it never even happened.
Yeah.
Well, it also... I think we first realized we had this commonality when we first realized that he usually starts his messages off the same way to everyone. Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
And it's very endearing. I appreciate it.
Because I know how he says it.
Exactly. Hey, you can buddy. Hear him saying it.
So, he's a good-hearted man.
He is. And then he messaged me, you're like, hey, man, how's it going? He's like, oh, everything's good. How are things at the studio? This is usually how it goes. Oh, things are good. You know, how are things? Good. And it's just that small talk. And then it kind of like starts to get to the next phase of what a conversation would go. And then it quickly retracts like a turtle.
Yeah. But the thing is that I think it seems like we're getting closer and closer to actually hanging out with him again.
Way. It does.
I'd love to have him back on air.
He would love the studio.
Oh, he would fall in love with the studio.
He would.
I told him, do a half-hour show with us, man. That's Come it. In once a week for a half hour.
He messaged me today, and I just kept reiterating, have you been here? And he's like, no, come to the studio, and we'll talk. Just come to the studio. That's all I want. Just come hang out.
Hmm.
So hopefully he will.
I've got all this forward. Like this energy in my arm right now. I feel like energy coursing through my arm. Like I need to hit something. Well, I'm wired for some reason. I feel like I just I don't know, man. We need a heavy bag in here.
That would be good.
We need a heavy bag and we need a pull-up bar, like a standalone pull-up bar and dip station.
Yeah, especially for this winter. Well, what's up with the gym in your basement, right? Are we building something down there?
I want to get something going on down there, but we got a 7-foot-high ceiling in the basement, so whatever we put in there has to be practical. It can't really be anything over our heads. I was looking at... I went on to Amazon to see if there were any pull-up bars that were shorter than, you know, 6 feet. Like, because I started imagining the practicality of having a short pull-up bar.
Right.
Obviously, you want to be able to hang full body. But what if you're really just in a pinch? I mean, you can still lift off from your knees and then tuck your knees.
For sure.
It's a full, so that has to exist. It doesn't. I swear to God, if I had a little bit more know-how, I would package that
right.
And it would be a bestseller.
I would think so. Someone would use it. People would use it. People, like you said, in a pinch.
Pull-ups
in a pinch.
Totally. It would be self-supporting, so you don't have to ruin your walls.
Yep.
But sometimes you just don't have a good doorway for pull-ups. My pull-up doorways have been ripped from my life. All of them are gone. When we moved out of the studio, all my pull-up doorways were gone.
That was the perfect doorway, the ones in the old studio. The ones here are too tall and fragile. I don't think they would work.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm with you. If we could figure that out, that would be amazing.
So that's Vinny Brusco, everybody. He's like one of the. I liken him to like a Glade air freshener, that is on. He's on a. I don't know. It's, you put those on like a 12-minute timer.
Right.
Every time the timer elapses, a little spritzer
or even
freshness comes out. A little spritzer of Vinny every like 12 hours.
Even motion sensor, because it's almost like he senses us walking by. So he's like, oh, let me message them.
That's it. That's it. Like it's like you're getting like a balled up piece of loose leaf thrown at your head in class. It's like, hey, yo, and you just try to get somebody's attention. Right. That's pretty much what it is. He's throwing little balled up pieces of loose leaf at us.
But you're like, part of you's like, well, what?
He's like, what? Well, what is? Well, I don't. Let's evolve this.
Baby. Right.
Let's hang out together. Okay. Let's get. It's just like these extended pleasantries. It's like. Let's hang out, Vin.
Oh,
come on, stop teasing us.
Love you, Vin.
Love you, Vin. All right, so. Gonna change directions now.
Oh, yeah. Ship is changing.
Matt, how was your day, dude?
It was all right, bro.
You work hard? Yeah, everybody sees that you got a new haircut. Why don't you show everybody your haircut?
No, I don't like
Uh-oh.
It. It's too short. And it's all fucked up now.
No, you had it styled yesterday. You used an old-fashioned American haircut.
Yeah, you know, good old-fashioned American hair.
Yeah, you look like you just walked out of the 1950s. It's great.
Yeah, you look like you're in Gangs of New York.
That's it, bro. You should take over the whole neighborhood. Seriously. Mike, your mic's on now.
You know Gerald Ford? You know her?
Geraldine Ford?
Geraldine Ford.
Yeah.
Isn't it Geraldine Ferraro?
No. I think that's somebody altogether different. Okay, so listen to this. We got a couple of things to get around to tonight, okay? This is just the fact of the matter. We need to get around to these things. It has to be done, okay? I have successive Hillary Clinton articles that need to be read in a row, okay? We're going to try to just blast through these. This is starting with ABC News, okay? FOBs. How Hillary's State Department gave special attention to friends of Bill after the Haiti quake. Okay, so this officially connects the two on at least one occasion. In a series, it's like it's just confirming it, okay? In a series of candid email exchanges with top Clinton Foundation officials during the hours after the massive 2010 Haiti earthquake, a senior aide to the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, repeatedly gave special attention to those identified by the abbreviations for FOB, Friends of Bill, or WJC VIP, William Jefferson Clinton VIPs. Quote, need you to flag when people are friends of WJC, wrote Caitlin Cleverick, then a senior State Department official who was juggling incoming offers of assistance being funneled to the State Department by the Clinton Foundation. Most I can probably ID, but not all. Isn't this an FOB? Cleverick writes later, when a Clinton Foundation aide forwards a woman's offer of medical supplies. If not, she should go to city.org, she adds, directing the person deemed not to be a Clinton friend to a general government website. You see that? You see that? And you care? You think that even in the most juvenile of ways, what Donald Trump says in private is really, you know, just kind of childish, and I don't even talk. Actually, the only way that we get explicit over here is when we kind of, like, you know, joke gay with each other. That's the most explicit. We don't even talk about women anymore. It's the weirdest thing.
I always do. You know what I always do.
Yeah, well, we talk about women. We talk about women, but it's like, you know, it's not.
Majorly, it's, yeah.
It's not middle school.
We joke
it's
about
at
BBC
least college. What, college junior? Maybe college sophomore, junior? It's still around there. You're not going to get more than that out of us, okay? You want to compare the two? Are you out of your mind? Did you just comprehend? Did anybody, besides the people I know have comprehended it, did anybody out there who is listening to this for an alternate point of view, can you comprehend the enormity of that kind of influence peddling? Where you're talking about a situation of life and death. Life and death here. This was a natural disaster. And you're pretty much, you're prioritizing who gets a chance at aid and who gets a chance at contracts and whatnot to be, based on what? Based on the Clintons and their personal, private ambitions. And this is why they've been able to make tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, without ever creating anything that anybody ever wanted, needed, asked for, fantasized about. You can't compare the two. Can't compare the two. Donald Trump grabs pussies, and that's why we can't have him in the White House. Are you kidding me? That would be the least of our problems of the last 20 years. Okay? Say 10 years ago, you heard Donald Trump talk like a buffoon with his friends, like most guys do, especially when they know they're not being filmed. And you saw Billy Bush? He's really upset. He's really upset because he got fired, and he thinks that he's not going to get his career back now.
There's another Bush now?
I don't know if it's a Bush. It's just that guy, that guy from whatchamacallit.
Donald Trump will be like, yeah, I said it, and I still joke around a lot about it like that. What's a big...
Yo.
That's who he was talking to when it was recorded? Was Billy Bush?
Billy Bush, but it was off air. It was like behind the scenes type of stuff, but the cameras were rolling. Everybody's just like going to be turning in their VHS tapes now when everybody was, you know, in different places at different times, working for different goals and all that stuff. It's the most ridiculous thing in the world.
Yeah, I don't know how that affects his campaign now.
God, to think about the people who are watching. The hypocrites. The hypocrites.
Why he didn't even, shit should matter. Like when Hillary Clinton, however long ago it was recorded saying she doesn't support gay marriage, this and that. You want to dig back for some shit? Dig some shit about that.
Oh yeah, they are not the friends. They're no friends
like,
of anybody.
If that was Bill Clinton, that was recorded and his voice was recorded, he would fucking deny it until they found out. Definitely, it was him, and then he'd be like, "Oh, okay, it was
this is
just
a fake."
Like when he was president,
he would say it's a fake. He
just
would
like
say
when
it's
he
a
was
fake.
President.
Yeah,
it's fucking bullshit.
Yeah, well, the most serious piece of shit is that you know. Remember, this is the guy that was actually putting cigars into women's vaginas.
Yeah.
In the, I mean,
it's
just,
legendary and everything. But, I mean, come on, you got caught.
I mean, he,
you know,
he achieved what so little have.
Yeah, yeah, slime covered cigar.
Okay. Now you.
Monica Lewinsky. That was the one he did it to. Right?
Lewinsky was clean.
You think Hillary took a drag from that cigar?
No. No. Absolutely not. I don't think so. Who the hell knows anymore? Let me see here. What's going on in the chat room? I wish I could see everybody in the chat, but it doesn't give you a full list. So I see Johnny Kimball and Brad, Nikki, Lee. I know there's more, but vagina cigars for the lady who smokes after sex. That says that's by Nikki in the chat room. Go get him, girl. You get him. What's happening here? So we got a couple other things here I want to read successive. So pick that up. That's a huge story. And it's all you need to know. But it doesn't matter. Isn't that the saddest part? It doesn't matter.
What?
All of this shit. Everything that we're learning just today. There's no good news. Well, there's nothing else. There's nothing. There's no good news. You know, Donald Trump didn't save no kitten from a tree that was trapped in a tree. Hillary Clinton, we didn't hear anything about like a heroic thing. It's just everybody's shit. It's nobody's strengths. It's everybody's shit. We are wallowing in everybody's shit. And you know what the media has us doing? The media has us on our hands and knees sifting and wading through shit that's not ours. We're taking shits ourselves eventually. We just start shit. We're up to our knees in shit. But we're sifting through it. And we're trying to make sense of the shit. You know, we're trying to pit Hillary's past up against Donald's past. We got all these shit. All we're doing is comparing shit. And we're covered in shit. It's all over us. We don't know what's our shit or what's somebody else's shit anymore.
That's other people's pathogens.
And why is that? And why is that? Because the media has taken away our privacy. And there's a reason why privacy is so important. And in a way, the media did a lot more to just weigh the way that people live their lives, because now they're living, they don't even have, it's not so much that they have to live with their own feelings anymore. They're being told what to feel on such a greater basis than ever in human history. They're being told what to be upset about constantly. So you have all this going on. And it's just like that's a dangerous place when you can't decipher what's yours and what's somebody else's. And all we're doing is just peeping on everybody. And the other thing it's done is it's killed the whole notion of fame. Tim Pool had talked about that on air too, and talked about it with us off air as well. And I agree with it 100%, because it's a topic that we brought up on this show many times, actually on different types of shows. This one and Zadal's in New York throughout the years. And the one thing I always, and when I say that the media has destroyed the notion of fame is dead, is because what is fame? What was fame? Look at the age of the silver screen, the golden years of Hollywood. What was a movie star? You know, what were our famous musicians like without all the media coverage? there was a mysticism that were built up around these people. They were titans, and they were almost like, you know, idols in their own right. You saw them on very, very few occasions, and mostly you just see their work. Obviously, there was always Hollywood rags and people talking about relationships, and there was always tabloids and stuff like that, but not like today. Not like the Twitter and the stalkers and the paparazzi and all this shit where we know what people, our favorite person, is eating because they already posted the pictures of it, and it's actually a career move to expose themselves completely like that. It's like, you think about it, I remember the first time I heard Don Mattingly's voice, because even in the late 80s, early 90s, the coverage of Yankee games was nothing like it is today. I mean, this is ridiculous. Any sports team, every sports team has their own network. And go ahead.
No, that's what I was going to say. They have the YES Network.
Yeah, well, they have it, but not only that, but the think about it in the like 88, 89, 90, all throughout our first grade and all that shit. We saw these guys play every day. You go to the stadium, you watch them play every day, they look 10 feet tall, and you don't believe it's really them, because you're not exposed to them any other place, and nothing. You don't even know what their voices sound like, because there's no pre-game show, there's no post-game show, there's nothing like that. And I remember, I think Susan Waldman grabbed Don Mattingly, and I heard his voice, and I think it was the first Wade Boggs post-game I saw. I was like, wow, that's Wade Boggs' voice? Like, this shit blew me away.
I was like, yeah, hit the ball, too.
Yeah. That shit blew me away, just hearing their voices for the first time. But now you can find out what the hell they ate.
Yeah.
The last four nights, if you wanted to.
Soon people...
There's no romantic type of... We're way too hands-on. It's all... It's fried out, yeah. The level of access we have with each other has just fried everything out.
People are going to start posting pictures of their bowel movements soon.
Well, dude, look at Clark Gable. A guy like Clark Gable. Look at a guy like, Rock Hudson or James Frank Cagney. Sinatra. The Rat Pack. Or the Summit, as they would call themselves. Or the Summit. The Summit or the Syndicate?
Syndicate.
Those guys, oh my God, those days are gone. They did a lot of pussy grabbing, but those days are gone. You think about the media coverage; those guys were like, there was still a buffer between how they can exist as private people and what we only had to imagine their lives were like. But now, there's just, like, you want to know what their lives are like? Well, then just subscribe to these three channels, and you can watch them do almost everything except fuck. And every 4 years, a sex tape will leak anyway, and you'll see that, too. It's just like, you've seen everybody naked, or you've seen everybody with jizz sprayed all over their back. It doesn't matter. We've seen everybody however way they come.
Literally,
that's all it is.
But my thing is, like, I think one of the biggest victims, quote in air quotes, victims, is like Tiger Woods. Is like, if TMZ wasn't there to record, you know, his wife and him backing up in the driveway and fucking up and all that shit, none of that shit would have happened. He'd still be on top. And you think about the greats. You think Jack Nicklaus?
That's true.
Was faithful to his wife? Maybe he was. You know, I don't know the man, but probably not.
You know, that's really true.
Arnold Palmer, Arnie's Army? Do you know how many groupies that dude probably had?
Dude, you know, that's a really great point that I've never even considered, because what was the criminal part in any?
None.
There was no
moral. It was all moral.
All moral. But that, and how did it break, though? You said TMC was solely responsible for Tiger Woods? I forget.
His wife at the time, Elin, had discovered like text messages or something like that. And he had backed up out of... She had backed up... No, he was trying to leave.
I remember the car.
He was trying to leave back up, and she smashed his car window with a golf club or something like that. And then some... I forgot exactly
how. And then inquiries were made, and the story just started developing?
It started to break, exactly. But TMZ broke the story.
You know...
But it's stuff like that, you would think Jack Nicklaus, it would have quietly went away. No one would have known.
That's so funny. Now that I think about it, you know, he wasn't living a very fulfilling life. You can tell, if you're chasing pussy like that, when you're chasing tail that hard and you've got so much and there's no limit to how much you need,
no
to
one's
feel,
telling you no.
It's just there's something very, that's a well you're never filling, you know. So I sympathize for the problem he's got. That is a fucking problem, definitely. But that's so fucked up now that I think about it.
And
what happened?
It literally destroyed one of the greatest. And this is, none of our heroes, none of the people that we look up to are the perfect icons that we would love them to be. They all have something that if we knew about them would make us cringe and make us even second guess our loyalty to them. But because of the romanticism, the lack of access prior to whatever, 95, you know, we were able to kind of blindly stay, you know, passionately, you know, care about these people. But, you know, someone like a Tiger Woods, it literally destroyed his career because of the uniqueness and of the sport of golf. When something like that happens to you on a personal level, it totally throws you off. And he was never able to recover, obviously.
It's really messed up. That's a really messed up thing. I never really thought of it from that point of view because, and then it really comes down to is, I guess, do you destroy a person that you, someone whose work that you like just because you found out what they were like?
Right.
Because you know that they do good work either way. So if it's not a legal issue or they didn't defraud, if they're not Bernie Madoff, or they didn't defraud people, and it just comes down to a matter of taste. You can say that he's a role model and this and that, and he shouldn't be doing this because he has a responsibility to kids, which is bullshit. He does not. Nobody does. Okay, look at what Hannah Montana is today. But where are we going with that?
I think you were just speaking to role models and the weight that maybe society puts on that?
No, I'm talking about the reason why it's important that whatever you do, there's a need for privacy for a number of reasons. You keep things private, even your demons, they should be private, unless, like I said, you're abusing somebody.
Right. There's bringing other people involved.
There's violence being committed, or there's a theft or something like that. Right. Like I said, just a matter of taste. So a guy's not being faithful to his wife, it's a matter of taste, but you don't throw a man away for that, you know? So it comes down to, we need privacy, because then people like Tiger Woods, somebody, the media wouldn't be as comfortable with doing just what they did.
Right.
Because we, as a society, would be a little bit more privacy-minded.
Right.
So when you do that and you take that off the table and you also tell people that you can be a fan of somebody's work but really make sure that you don't make an idol out of somebody, is because there should be an approach to say, listen, there's lots of bad people out there that we never found out about that we ended up loving to the day that we all died.
Right, right, right.
So let's give everybody the benefit of the doubt and say, I love their work. I'm a huge fan of their work. I don't know a damn thing about them because no matter what the hell they do in front of a television camera, until you've been able to spend a few months with them,
right,
it's all bullshit.
Right.
So it's like, that's a real.
So what if you found out, you know, who's your greatest icon? Living.
Living icon?
Living icon. Who's your favorite?
Who the hell could it be?
Christian Bale.
Not Christian Bale. Seriously.
Well, it'd probably be... Oh, living?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I guess there might be a couple actors. But not icon. Who the hell would be my icon? I don't know. Let's just say Derek Jeter.
All right, Derek Jeter. Let's say you found out he was a blood-sucking Marxist. What does that do to you?
It turns me up inside. But, I mean, the 90s... It doesn't make the 90s any more...
You were able to separate it.
Yeah, it wouldn't make the 1990s any less of a magical time for any of us around here,
yeah.
Especially since we were so many years from being sociopolitically aware, we wouldn't even give a fuck.
Right.
You know, if you told us back then, it didn't matter. So, when you talk about nostalgic, if Gary Sanchez or Tyler Austin, who are rookies right now, came out. and they became Marxists. Right. I would start a campaign to make sure that they were made the league minimum, that they donate. I want them to donate all of their. I want 90% of their salaries sent somewhere else. Okay, don't you dare play in all places. Major League Baseball, where the contracts are guaranteed.
Right.
Okay. There have been people who have been made filthy rich off of contracts without even playing for the majority of 4 years. Carl Pavano alone, 4 years, $40 million. The guy pretty much took a vacation. I think he pitched in like 16 games. You know, you want to get at least 30 starts out of a guy, right. 20 to 30 starts every year. You know?
I think we're in this weird
200 innings.
Weird transitional space of privacy to non-privacy, where kids nowadays, they have no problem putting a phone in front of their face, 23 out of the 24 hours of the day, and sharing exactly where they are, who they're with, what they're eating, what their spending habits are. And I think that they're in this transition right now. People, especially celebrities, because they're the ones that are primarily getting the attention, are the ones that are going to be going to fall prey to, oh, you fucked up. I think that there's going to come a point where there's going to be generations of celebrities where, things that we typically would consider, oh, celebrity fucked up. No one's going to care. Like you said, yeah. We've seen and done everything.
Yeah.
There's nothing that a celebrity can do that will embarrass them to the point of falling from grace.
Yeah.
Which I think is a good thing. I almost feel like it's a purging period, because I'm with you about the magic of not knowing exactly what your celebrity is all about or whoever you look up to, but then don't you want to know that person you look up to is who they are?
Like, yeah, Bill Cosby.
I think that's true.
Bill Cosby's a great example. I mean? Like, that's another one being able to separate. He's one of the greatest comedians.
He almost made it.
He almost made it. They're like,
well, Joe Paterno almost made it too. If you want to go back to sports,
Joe Paterno's another one.
He's another one made it. Like, you think about Joe Paterno's body of work and his all of his life up until the final months of his life.
It's so true.
I mean, because right after this stuff happened, he died.
6 months or so after
it was quick.
Yeah, he perished.
He must have lost his will to live, dude. He must have lost his will to live. The only way.
He was old too, though. Still,
yeah, but he just retired the year before.
But for us that are still living, there's a decent percentage of the public that feel like his image, his legacy is tarnished because of that. And he almost had, the perfect coaching career, essentially.
That's why I say, you never know. I guess you never know. Who knows? How about this? How about we agree? Because I have to say that when I think about it, I'm like this mostly. Mm-hmm. I know I talk cynical on the air a lot. But I often check myself, and I want to do it right now.
Okay.
Let's just agree that we hold out hope.
Okay.
The Ernest Hemingway approach. Okay. The only way to know if you can trust somebody is to trust somebody. So let's just hold to the Ernest Hemingway approach.
Okay.
So we don't become shut out ourselves.
That's true.
How about that?
And also, it also makes me think about what's the opposite. Who has been maybe painted in a bad light that, actually is a good person?
I don't know.
Mel Gibson.
I have been reading and seeing and watching interviews and really examining things. And especially because he doesn't make any excuses for the way that he was, because he's clean now.
Okay.
And he's not making any excuses, but I've watched quite a few things that just it brings a little bit more understanding to a little bit of a tortured soul,
right?
Who is conscious of what's happened and is trying to right the ship. And I look at that, and I couple that up with just the acknowledgement of the really good work that he has done.
Yeah.
I mean, Apocalypto and...
Yeah, that was a good movie.
And
Braveheart.
And Braveheart, Passion of the Christ, whether or not you can stomach it.
Yeah, yeah. I saw Passion of the Christ in the theater.
What did you think about Passion of the Christ?
It was deep. I mean, not to go too deep personally, but, I my family, on my mom's side specifically, grew up strong Christian, but then my dad's side... grew up more I guess, more spiritual in a sense. So I have like this interesting mix of both. So when I saw that, you know, you see it through, what's the word? The secular lens of just going to the movies, right?
Right.
But then you're seeing like someone is. I remember the opening scene was like that dark scene in the forest at night, and I forgot what it's actually portraying, but he was able to really convey, I don't know, spirituality or spiritualness or something, but I felt something, and I don't know what it is. I mean, when what's his name, Carvajal, who played Jesus,
Caviezel,
was carrying that cross, man. I was just like, man,
dude, you know what this?
This is like, you know, because I listen, I have my days where I'm like, I don't know if Jesus existed.
You know that he was struck by lightning during the crucifixion. I'm serious.
What?
I'm not even joking around.
What, like Frankenstein?
Jim Caviezel was struck by lightning.
Jesus Christ.
I was like, who? I've never heard of that before.
You never heard? It's true.
No. Gypsy and I heard it as you were saying that Jesus was struck by lightning. and we didn't know.
It's pretty funny.
I was like, I've never read
but
that
no,
at all.
No, that's what I meant. But Jim Caviezel, like just shit like that, like yeah. What you just said, like he was struck by, that's pretty weird. And there's a bunch of other weird shit that happened.
I would be interested because I'm
filming that.
I feel like, you know, Mel Gibson took that movie extremely seriously. So, you know, there have been stories of certain movies of all types, of all genres and stuff, when the crew and the director and the actors and the script is there, when they are like, you know, just in that zone, it summons certain things. Like Poltergeist shit happened,
Yeah.
I mean, even Poltergeist, the movie, those actors died. I mean, all types of shit happened. So I would be interested to know what else happened on that set.
Oh, there's a list of things that happened on that set.
I bet.
Poltergeist? You know
Oh, there's a list of things that happened. Like during every night, where they had the crucifix, there would be the snakes that would go. They would clean it out, and they would just always just end up back there. These snakes, like every day, it was a bunch of weird shit happened. I think more than one person got struck by lightning.
You know, with that movie, the thing for me was because when was that? 2000 and
I don't know.
I think it was 2003-ish, but in either case. When that movie came out, I wasn't really, and I'm still not a religious person, mm-hmm. but I'm proud about my Roman Catholic childhood, and I love it. It's still very...
The fellowship, that's what I love the most. The fellowship and music, that's what I
fantastic.
Love about church.
It really was. It was fun going to Corpus Christi. I want to get, that's who I want to have on the show soon.
Okay.
I'm going to work on it, I'm going to get it, because she's back in town. When I was from my kindergarten, my first year of school at Corpus Christi Elementary, mm-hmm. was Sister Lise became president.
Okay.
I mean, principal.
Okay.
Sister Lise, okay? She is French-Canadian. She's got the accent and everything. Uh-huh. Patriotic woman if you ever met her, though.
Sounds like
she was a hurricane of a hurricane of a nun, okay?
Right.
And every morning when we were at school from kindergarten to eighth grade. She stayed with us. She arrived in 1990 and she left in 1999 with us.
Okay.
Like she was there just for us, but now she's back after all these years. Okay. So I want to go back and my aunt works there. I want to go talk to her and get her on. That would be amazing to have Sister Lise on this show and talk to her as an adult. That would be amazing. I want to know what she thinks about what's going on in the world, what's going on with like in the realm of, you know, faith. I just want to talk to her. That would be great. I'm going to get that done.
I've always loved...
you have to watch my mouth that night.
I've always loved Catholic priests and nuns that have grown up in the church, you know, believed all the dogma, just letter of the law, and then had a personal awakening.
Yeah. Well, you know,
their perspective on life is so refreshing to me sometimes. And they're just able. It's almost a comedic sense. Like that's why I'm personally drawn to comedy so much, because it's such a spiritual, psychological introspective of humanity. But there's something, I don't know, because I haven't studied Catholicism in depth. But there's something in Catholicism that if you go through it and you follow it and then you have a spiritual kind of awakening to what really is going on, you're like, oh, and then you're able to connect the dots.
That's I know a lot of people that share that same view, man. And I, you know, it doesn't really. I think it, you know what it was in 2003. That's what I was trying to get around to. Around that time, I wasn't really going to church that much. Still don't. But when this came out, I said, you know, I'm going to go watch it. And you know, I appreciated it. I actually went back to church once or twice after I saw it, but it didn't take really, and I couldn't keep up with it. And but the thing about the movie that I love so much, and months later, that's what this on my right arm is about.
Okay.
Now this is a Syrian Aramaic. So okay. I was actually talking to a professor. I was a fan of his work online, and I was in Middle Eastern ancient history and a couple other ancient art stuff classes in college. Mm. And I found this guy that was actually keeping some preservation of the language, the Aramaic, especially the closest dialect that is still
considered what Jesus spoke. Right?
Consider what he spoke.
Right.
And I told them that I was doing a school.
Do we know what it sounds like? Do we know what it sounds like?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, okay, we do.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I think they got it for the. Didn't they do it for the movie?
Well, they spoke in Aramaic.
They spoke Aramaic. Yeah. In the
they
movie.
Did. Okay.
No, I don't even think it was there. Was it? Oh, that's they don't. No one speaks that anymore, right?
There was some kind of dialect they used. They tried to get close, but in either case, I found this guy and I asked him because there's one part. Mm. There was one part about the movie, and well, let me say it. It tickled me on a religious level only because I had roots with the story.
Right.
But I was watching it. I remember watching it, and I think it was the last time I saw it because it's just brutal.
It is brutal,
it's
man.
It's brutal.
It's good, but I can't see it again.
Yeah. I always get curious about at least watching the parts with Satan.
Right. In the bush. That was the opening scene, right?
The opening scene.
Yeah.
In the Garden of Olives and
Garden of Eden.
Eden, no, that's where mankind started.
Oh, see, that's
the Olive Garden. He was at the Olive Garden, but
he was Italian.
but Satan. The depiction of Satan in that movie was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
It was almost like this ambiguous face. You don't know if it's man or a woman, it's in the dark robes and a very, very gentle lullaby. There was like a lullaby to the voice, but there was a lot of power there. And then when you see Satan in the crowd mocking Jesus all along the stations of the cross, holding that fucked up baby.
It made it real, man. It made it real.
But not only was the imagery awesome, but from a completely non-religious standpoint, if you have the guts to watch Passion of the Christ, it is a harrowing story of a mother and a son.
Yeah. Forget take the Bible, take all of that stuff out. Just look at it as a story, like you said, a mother and a son.
That was
and someone who goes through some shit.
That's painful, just on a mother and son level. Her mopping up his blood, and it's
one of the toughest watches ever, next to Human Centipede.
But in either case, this is the translation for, and I have the phonetic written down somewhere, but the translation for this is. Is for the phrase "embrace your cross,"
okay?
Because in the movie, there's other awesome messages in there. Mm-hmm. Now, whether you're a Catholic or not, Christian or not, seeing a man grip the cross he's about to get nailed to,
figuratively and literally,
right? And to have to pick it up for the first time and stand there and holding it, while the other guys who you're going to be executed with are even mocking you too, saying, "Look at this fool! He embraces his cross." They don't want to die, and he's just accepting it. That right there, it doesn't. That's not a religious thing at all. Mm-hmm. That is a character thing. Will you embrace your cross, or are you going to try to pass the buck?
Right.
You know, and that was just, I wanted
to. Are you going to own your shit or not?
Now, of course, the problem is I can't give anybody that backstory when they see me walking onto a bus with something that looks like ISIS. So, I mean, believe me, there's been a couple of times in the last few months I looked down at my forearm. I was like, should I start lasering this? Because I have an idea to make the whole right arm some kind of a Star Wars Revolutionary War scene.
Wow.
You know?
Listen, I mean, just going, transitioning to tattoos, I don't, there's nothing wrong with covering up or changing it. You know.
Yeah, but the thing is that the text is so thick.
Oh.
You know, if it was just line work and stuff.
Have you had someone check it out?
Mikey told me. Okay. And Addicted to Ink in White Plains, the only place we get art ink, everybody.
Shout out to them.
And their tattoo convention is coming up this month.
It is.
It actually should be next week. We were supposed to be doing stuff for them. I have to talk to Lou about passes.
We've been busy. Passion of Christ. That was a heavy movie. But you know what it reminded me of? The heaviness of the devil in that movie. The similarity I saw. Do you remember that Twilight Zone, Frank, where it was a stormy night and a guy knocks on a castle door and it's owned by a bunch of monks and it's storming out and they don't want to let him in. They won't let him in and it's horrible outside. He could die out there and they won't let him in. And he begs and begs and begs and they finally let him in. And they're just, you know, he's staying there overnight. And while he's staying there, he's hearing this howling. He's hearing this howling and it's driving him crazy. He can't go to sleep. And he follows the sound, he follows the noise, and he follows it to the basement. And he keeps hearing it. And he goes down and he sees a door, and there's a man behind the door. And the guy's confused. He's like, I heard this sound, but I'm seeing a man. And the guy's saying, oh, thank you for coming. These crazy monks have locked me up in here. They've locked me up in here, and I've been here forever. Just let me out. And the guy's clearly conflicted. He doesn't know what to do, but he sees this man. He's like, how could these monks lock up this man? And he seems so normal. And he lets him out. And he goes upstairs, and the monks realize, and they say, what have you done? What have you done? What have you done to the world? And he's like, what? What are you talking about?
Oh, shit.
And they talk about how they'd been traveling for centuries looking for this man. And they found them, and they locked them up. And it was, of course, you know who?
Satan?
Yeah, it was the devil.
I have not seen this one.
Oh, it was so good.
I thought I saw all the Twilight Zones.
It was so good. It's one of the best. It's one of the best.
What's the name of it?
I don't know.
Damn, dude.
Yeah, it was really good. One of my favorites.
Well, you know, Twilight Zone is some of the best writing that's ever seen the airwaves in this country.
Sure.
I mean, the writing is unbelievable. So it's such great commentary about and great horror and great suspense and just great inflections of...
In 30 minutes.
It's unbelievable, yeah.
In 30 minutes.
You know who would be able to do that now? If they had the time?
Christian Bale.
The Duffer Brothers.
Oh.
Would be able to perfectly recreate.
Hey, that's a really interesting thought. The Stranger Things Duffer Brothers.
Really?
If they did Twilight Zone, you think they would do a good job? I think that would be pretty interesting.
That would be.
They've already shown to respect how to respect an era, a period of time. It was very authentically 80s.
I would love to see someone like that take a stab at talking about reboots and whatnot. I would love to see the Twilight Zone try and make a comeback. I would love them, and if they succeed at it, that'd be awesome.
And not even do like modern episodes, just take some of the
I bet you any money.
Oh, I met this guy on Craigslist. He's the fucking devil or something.
You see, you want to know something? Here's the thing. I believe that that writing talent is out there still.
I'm sure.
Can you imagine, though, if we had a media and an entertainment system, industry that catered to and presented the public with really great programming, deep programming, that you just keep serving it up to people until they get it? The problem is, I feel like we have digested and digested and digested information many times over by the time it gets down to the common person. And I feel like that was done incrementally, either directly or unknowingly. But it has definitely happened. Where it's just like people are not being challenged anymore. They're not being challenged at school. They're not being challenged at home. And there's definitely nothing of substance on television. Very, very little of it. So, I mean, God. You know, you think about the internet, what great wonders, and what are most internet users doing? It's mostly entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all entertainment at this point. Entertainment and news. That's what people want.
If people were using it to learn, I mean, it's just about picking up quick hits, 140 characters at a time, of what's happening, scores, updates, tweets. It's really, you know, there's not a lot of hard research being done out there. You know, it's like everybody, it's like chicken feed. It's we're all like eating bird feed.
Well, the lowest common denominator that I found was that website that tells you how long it would take you to read the article before you read it. So they literally have their site and their articles organized by time. And it tells you, oh, this is a 5-second read, or this is a 2-minute read.
Right.
Or a 10-minute read. So you can decide based on how busy you are, how much you want to read, how much information you want to consume. Talking about compartmentalization.
Yeah.
Good grief.
It's like, please, put me on a limit. Whatever you do, limit. If I read more than I have to, then for Christ's sake.
Right. What are we doing?
I don't know. I don't know. But where do we leave off? Where do we leave off? We talked about Vinnie Brusco. We talked about the Passion of the Christ and how that came up. How did it come up? Oh, irredeemable people or people who redeemable based on... Mm. You know, this is a pretty good show.
It's a great show.
We did a pretty good episode. It's 7:50 right now, and we didn't waste all of our time on Hillary Clinton.
Fuck that bitch.
I see Outrage Machine. Oh, there's so many things here, though.
We did mention Satan a couple times, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did.
So there you go. There's the leaks there. Oh, here's the full Alex Jones clip of him ripping off his shirt. I didn't know that there was more. You know when he says, yeah, I'm liberal. You know how it always... you know how it always it pauses right there? There's more to it. At the end of this video, he even tries selling a vitamin. A special slide of vitamin. Dude, watch this shit. This is... This was such a great thing. Hold on. It's unbelievable. And this is my favorite video of his anyway. But let me get the screen capture on this.
It's our time of liberalism is here. You drink that fluoride. You take those vaccines. Donald Trump says vaccines might be dangerous because one of his kids got hurt. Shut up! You don't have free speech. You understand? You listen to me. I rule this country now. I'm liberal. Screw him. Ban his free speech right now. Ban it! Let me tell you what else you do. You don't visit InfoWarsLife.com with the number one new vitamin.
The number one new vitamin fusion something. It's like, oh my God. You should have just kept the skit about ripping your shirt off separate.
Dude, like, I wonder if like his sponsors bailed on him.
He looks like he's... I mean, that's just genetics right there. What's that? It's a mesomorph, right? With the broad shoulders like that? Or is that... what is it? Endomorph? Mesomorph.
What the fuck does that mean?
There's three different types of body types. You have your ectomorph, your mesomorph, and your endomorph. Endomorph usually has like rounder shoulders, a little bit more frumpy, and a little bit high, easy to gain a lot of fat. Your mesomorph is broad-shouldered, stocky, like really built for like powerlifting type bodies. And then your ectomorph is like me, like long, slender muscle bellies and a little bit more of a Bruce Lee build. You know?
Never heard of it.
Well, it's just, you know, human beings.
That's pretty cool, though.
It's just forms that humans come in.
You know, all right.
But I don't know.
We're all the same, bro.
In either case, yeah, he looks like he... And that's why it's awesome to watch him get physical, because I know he can probably rip through at least 58 third graders at once.
He'd be like Raka Raka.
Yeah. He would just be like one of those like force explosions. You just see third graders, boom, go into the air. Oh, my gosh. So there's that. He's an endomorph, Brian. Gadget Doc's in the chat room. Brian O'Connor. Everybody, pick his brain. Also say hello to him. Brian, I hope everything's well with you down in North Carolina. I know that you've taken on some water. And let me know if everything's all right. We haven't spoken in a few days. You know what? 7:54. I got to do my thank yous. because I haven't been able to think of a way to record my thank yous yet and have it sound good. So let me do it now. Everybody, thank you so much. See, which that was easy. But I want to do a special acknowledgement to my bosses, okay? All my bosses out there who contribute to the show. And please, the October letters for the 1776 Club is out. I want to write to more of you. Go to patreon.com/ quite frankly and check out any of the packages there to support the show. It's an even trade. Great things. You're going to be sponsoring parts of the show, shout outs and Google Hangouts and feedback mechanisms and all this stuff. We hang out all the time. And of course, if you do the 1776 Club, then we become pen pals and I'm writing you a letter every month. All right. That is some good human interaction right there. You're going to use your wrist for something other than diddling yourself. Okay. You're going to write yourself a letter. It's going to go to me after I write it to you initially. So check that out. Patreon.com/ quite frankly. So here are my bosses. I need to shout them out. This is not in any order. Michael Wells, Nikki Solis, got her name right now. Andrew Dame, good buddy now. Laura Veris, Matt Smith, the good old Matt Smith, Mr. Moonlit. Sean Collins, Christian Peppas of the Amatory Murder, check them out. Great band from New York. Whole bunch of flavor they carry with them. Max and Caporato from Colorado, our star mind. We have to get him on the air again soon. I haven't seen him. Mad Mints, Jackie Milam, Jenny Lee, our good girl Jenny. Good girl, bad girl Jenny. Stephanie Klinaki. Okay, from StephanieKBeauty.com. She will turn you into Cleopatra, or she will turn you into Medusa. She will turn you into whatever you want. You want to be a cat? You want to be one of those cat people? She'll turn you into a cat. Okay? She is brilliant with the makeup stuff. Check her out. This is the only way I can describe this to you. And you can find her, Stephanie K. Beauty, on Instagram as well. That's Stephanie with a PH and an IE. I'll spell it out all together in the next episode. And of course, Matt and Brad. My brain on me. Brad, who is in the chat room right now, and Matt over here, the founder of the 1984 Club, and Matt and Brad, the right-hand man, he's your first mate now. Okay, he's under you. So thank you guys for being my bosses. I've got some new goals up on that Patreon, too. I have a $500 a month goal. There's a $1,000, a $2,000, and a $3,000. $3,000 a month, whenever it happens one day, and I hopefully we can get some businesses on and stuff like that. That'd be really awesome. Some really American-made small town businesses that have, I don't know, something cool going on. Would love to work with businesses like that. $3,000 a month, I'm taking the show on the road. I thought of it last night. That'll be more than enough money to make trips to Europe. Or to plan trips to Europe so we can do broadcasts all across a certain place. Hell, I will even come out and broadcast from some of your living rooms if you want. I'll just show up because I'll have the leeway to do that. Now, once the money's there and then I have to start thinking about having to travel, then I'll rethink all of my lofty ideas because I'll have then not want to go anywhere. I know what's going to happen. We're going to get to 3,000. I'm like, great. Okay. First thing we're going to do is we're going to go to, I'm just going to drive out to Poughkeepsie and do something there. And then just drive back that night. That's what I'll do. And I'll just tell people I'm in France. I'm in Paris, France, everybody. This is the woods in Paris, France. As you can see, the very famous woods. On the other side of this woods is the Louvre. And, but I'm running out of feed. I'm running out of tape right now. So we will reconvene back at the hotel room. Going back to New York tomorrow, so it was just one day in Paris. Thank you so much. We'll see you on the air on Monday night. All right. And that's what that's going to be like. I'll start lying about going somewhere. People are like, Frank, when are you going to go to, like, you know, England? Or when are you going to go to Rhode Island? Do something. You're making $3,000 a month. And then I'll start saying, hey, listen, I mean, I know that that is an option I have now, but I'm still on the air every night of the week. I'm still, doing the show that we all love to be a part of. See, I'm already thinking of all the excuses for not wanting to travel. All right, guys, have a great night. Talk to you all soon. Love you lots. And tomorrow we have a lot more to do. A lot more to do, because obviously we only spoke about one thing tonight. Got so much. All right, good night, guys. Be well.